Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Did you know that Off Camera was also a television show? Well, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that we are a podcast, a magazine, and a television show. But what you may not know is you can watch full episodes in glorious black and white on our own website, offcamera.com. And now we've made that even easier by creating a monthly subscription so you can watch all the Off Camera you want. For only $4.99, you can subscribe to Off Camera and binge watch until the cows come home. And not only that, but new episodes pop up every week, so you can always stay up to date with the show. If you haven't yet checked it out, it's a whole different way to experience Off Camera. As you're listening to these stories, you can watch these thoughts form on these artists' faces, and it feels like you're right there in the room during the conversation. So check that out. It's a great option to the podcast, and it's also a great way to support the show. So check that out at offcamera.com. Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Welcome to another edition of Off Camera, the show where I get to talk to iconic, creative, curious artists and find out how they got that way. And this time, I sit down with actress Alison Brie. After spending 7 years on AMC's Mad Men and NBC's Community, Alison Brie decided to take some time off from television. It wasn't until she read a script based on the 80s female wrestling show GLOW, which stands for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, that Alison decided to dive back into television. The problem was, even with her past success, the show's executives just weren't convinced she could do it. Alison had to fight for the role of Ruth and endure a drawn-out, emotional roller coaster ride of an audition process. As she says, "I would go from thinking, yes, I'm amazing, to sobbing in my car and thinking, oh my God, it's never going to happen." Alison was content to let her desire show, ignoring the old adage of never revealing your desperation in an audition. She says, "I don't really care for being aloof, so it's never going to be the vibe I put out. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and that's definitely a similarity I share with the character, Ruth." Her journey to getting on the show may have been difficult, but her experience on the set of GLOW has been magical. She says the show is like fantasy fulfillment. She gets to play a woman who goes after what she wants. Alison's also getting a taste of the empowerment that comes when women have ownership over stories about women. Alison and I discuss how the stunts on GLOW are real and really dangerous, how dealing with sexual harassment in character forced her to come to terms with her own Me Too experiences, and what to do when you're acting with Meryl Streep. Hint, keep your mouth shut and try to steal all her tricks. So pull up a chair and listen in. Hi, Alison.
Hi, Sam.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I am enamored with your show, GLOW.
Thank you.
And in the trailer, it's the opening scene of the whole series, and
yeah.
It's you in an audition.
Yeah.
And it's great, because it's you're reading this dramatic, very intense line,
yeah.
And then the casting director says, you're reading the man's part.
Yeah.
Can you read the female part? And the punchline of that scene is when they ask you to do the female role, you say, you knock on the table and say, "Oh, sorry to interrupt, your wife is on line two."
Yeah.
And it's, I think, the most pure expression of frustration with the profession of being an actress.
Definitely. I mean, so much of what we deal with on the show is even more relevant now than it maybe was in the 80s because
yeah.
There's much more of an awareness of all that stuff. It's just sort of at the forefront of conversation, obviously, right now with women's issues and
yeah.
things like that. But that scene, I mean, the pilot is all I read before I aggressively fought to be a part of the show. And it was just constantly surprising me page by page and delighting me and moving me. And that first scene was something I could really relate to, feeling underestimated as an actress. I think a lot of actresses feel that way where, you know, especially I went to theater school, you study theater, you get to play every different type of role,
right.
You know, and then you get out of theater school and you start working, trying to work in film and in television. And it's just sort of like, you're just going to, you know, you're going to be a weak woman and then she dies. Or like, you know, it's just sort of like a lot of, everything gets much smaller. And right away, everyone starts to tell you, here's the roles you're going to want to play or get asked to play. Here's the box that you're in and you should just try to pursue that. And it's your quickest road to success. And I think I always kind of rejected that in a way. I sort of heard that and was like, okay, but I'm going to try to do it all. And then in my mind, you know, two of my first jobs were Mad Men and Community.
Right.
To me, couldn't be more different as shows. And also in my mind, I felt like the characters I was playing on both, to me, were so different. And I was very much ready for just like, all right, industry, you know, notice these two very different things I'm doing. Clearly I'm capable of doing anything.
Right.
But very quickly was met with like, so you play sort of type A women who are sort of conservative and you're funny. So like, that's what you're going to do, which always struck me as really funny. There was sort of a disconnect between what I thought my work was showcasing and what it actually was. But I've been really lucky to work on great things. But Glow was the first time I read something and was like, oh my God, it's all here. There's a little bit of everything in this one show. And also, what a way to prove that I can do this other stuff, and what a fulfilling role, and what a character that I really relate to in terms of being like, see me a different way. I'm stronger than you think.
Well, you know, it's funny, as you're saying that, especially the example of Community and Mad Men, I realize that there's almost no better way to set yourself up on paper as an actress by showing your range.
I mean, that's what
right?
I thought, yeah.
And then to have that experience, and then immediately people start going, well, this is your box, or this is your lane, and this is how.
Yeah, I mean, even with Glow, there was a lot of skepticism from our showrunners about whether or not I could do the role, and I auditioned many times to prove to them that I could. And I'm happy to have, and I felt really proud to get the job once I did. Like, I earned it.
Well, I want to hear about that. But what I hear you saying is that no matter how, like, the best intentions and best luck and best opportunity, you're still going to run into the ceiling of what's available.
Yeah.
I think I forget what episode, but one of the more recent ones, you have a pretty direct statement. Your character as Ruth talking about what it is to be an actress and just waiting for an opportunity to show what you can do.
Yeah.
And like that, it turns out that that's the career.
Yeah, that's the work. Once you get the job, it's really fun and fulfilling. And then the job is like the grind of auditioning and the constantly having to prove yourself. And I guess what I realize, you know, when you have, there are so many differences between what success looks like in your mind as a little girl, just to be a working actress. When you get to things up close, you're like, oh, the grind never ends because my ambition's gonna continue and I'm gonna keep wanting to do better stuff and more than I've done before.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, right, there's never gonna be a time when you're just, I'm here, everything's easy now. You know, I think that just part of choosing this career is the constant unknown.
Well, I think the reason that Glow is both so exciting to you as an artist and to me as a viewer is obviously because there's not a lot of other shows like that.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're still talking about how revolutionary Glow is and how great it is just means that, you know, it's standing out because of the omission of other stories like that.
Absolutely. It's the dream job for women and in-depth roles. Every woman has like a really fully formed, fully realized character to play. Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch created our show, and Genji's a producer and really got it going. And I do think that Genji is really at the forefront of this battle to get more and different types of women on television in a real way.
Yeah, it's the Bechdel test on steroids.
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah.
And the other side of this show that's been really wonderful and amazing is that all of us are, we got to learn how to wrestle. We got to think about our bodies in a really different way.
Yeah.
And as athletes and kind of like take us out of this realm of like actress think of like, my body is just a tool to make men think I'm attractive.
To be hot.
to be hot.
And young.
Yeah.
And
to be
skinny
like skinny and sexy for men and for male programming, essentially.
Right.
And this show was like, first of all, they cast women of all different shapes and sizes, and they made very clear to us, our bosses, that they didn't want us to change our bodies. They wanted us to learn how to wrestle so we could do our own stunts on the show. They wanted us to have that strength, But they were never like, so lose weight. You know, they were like, we really like you how you are. And it just felt really good.
Yeah, I know. I was curious about your, if you could just describe and take me through your kind of emotional journey of auditioning.
It was very emotional. It's a good way to put it. It was very emotional. It was basically like, I was reading a lot of stuff. I had finished Mad Men and Community right about the same time. And then I had taken a year to, so was like, I can't do another show right away.
Right.
But then I read the script and I just was obsessed with it. And I had been reading a lot of other stuff and sort of like, you know, taking meetings with showrunners or things like that. And so I kept calling my agents to be like, so when will I be able to sit down with Genji? And we finally got to this conversation where they were like, this one's not really gonna go that way. I think you're gonna, it's just gonna more be an audition system and sort of like may the best actress win. And I was like, oh, I mean, okay, great, I'm up for auditioning. But it wasn't for like another week or so that I realized like, wow, they must really not wanna see me because why aren't I going in? Like, you know, I sort of found out later my agents had really been calling and calling and sending them different material. And finally, I was allowed to come in for a pre-read with casting, which is just you and the casting director on tape.
Right.
And Jen Houston is great. She had cast me in something before. And she, even when I came in, I feel like she was like, I mean, they didn't want to see you, but I told them, let me just film her.
Don't you love when you find out information you're not supposed to know?
2 seconds before auditioning for the thing. Oh, okay, great. But actually, it was kind of perfect because Ruth is up against that so much so on this show, much more so than I've experienced in my own life up to this point. I mean, certainly I've had more success as an actress than Ruth as a character when we meet her on the show. But I really was just, I can't describe how passionate I was about this part. And I think that that really showed even in that first audition on tape. And by the end of the day, I had already gotten a call saying the producers will see you tomorrow. And I was just, this whole process of auditioning for this show was a series of, yes, like I'm amazing, to then just like sobbing in my car after I would go in, very cold room to audition for.
Really?
And a tiny, smaller than the space we're in, and just silent women as you're doing like comedic scenes in the audition. So I would leave and get in my car and be like, it's not gonna happen, oh God.
You know? So you were really invested.
I was incredibly invested. And I had passed some opportunities being like, I wanna hold out for GLOW. And the conversations again with my agents would be like, they were very nervous and like, well, we can't promise you GLOW, but we could promise you this other show. And I was like, no. This has set the bar really high, and I don't want to do anything unless I feel as strongly about it as this show. So even if I don't get it, it's fine to let those opportunities go to do this thing. And just, and then I came in again. Then they flew me to Toronto to audition with Betty Gilpin.
Right.
They were like, we just want to see the two of you together because we're thinking you're the front contenders for these roles. I get to Toronto, no one's there. I'm thinking, oh, it'll be like Betty and I, a producer session, a chemistry read. We get there, I meet Betty in the hall, and very quickly we're like, let's just go for it in this audition. All right, here we go. And just do whatever you want to me, and we'll go full out, and it'll be great. We go into this empty room with two, it was a Sunday afternoon. There were two little children, you know, 18-year-old casting assistants. They were probably older than that.
They had
but
their
like,
phones.
You know what I mean?
They're
no, like okay, one was behind the camera and one had sides. The casting director begrudgingly came in with Jen Houston on the phone to be like clearly she didn't want to be there. But Jen Houston was on the phone, you know, in New York, and she was like, hey girls, you're gonna be great. Just have fun with it. And we were like, okay, great. And the woman left. It was just Betty and I and these casting assistants. So we just put ourselves on tape. At the end of the three scenes, the last scene was that wrestling scene, and we were truly picking each other up. At one point, I was down on the ground, and Betty was dragging me across the room, and I was like scratching the ground. And we just did it for, you know, 5 full minutes, and then we finally stopped, and we were like, I think we got it. And then Betty and I went out to what we still joke about is this, like, very funny coffee where, like, we already were falling in love with each other, and we both, Betty had already auditioned as many times as me, if not more, and we really wanted the job, but we didn't want to get our hopes up too much, so it was like we were having this coffee, like, clicking but keeping a distance. So then Betty and I stayed in touch texting. I got back to L.A., We had to audition another time. They flew Betty to Los Angeles to do one final audition for Jesse Peretz, who directed the pilot, and Genji again, and Liz and Carly. But definitely each point, I remember even getting that last call of like, they want you to come in one more time. And I was like, guys, I need to know.
Like,
are they seriously considering me for this part, or are they just having fun?
I was on Mad Men.
Have they seen Mad Men?
It's Alison Brie.
I was so on the verge of heartbreak that I was like, I need to know that I'm like really in the running here, and it's not just like a fool's errand. And they were like, no, you guys are really the top girls. They just want to get a better tape than the one you guys did by yourselves.
Where you were rolling around the floor in Toronto.
Yeah. And basically in this audition, when we went to do all the wrestling stuff, they were like, that's it. You don't really need to, that's enough. Thanks so much. And again, when I walked out of that room, I saw another girl sitting in the lobby, looked just like me, who I know was there to read with. To this day, I don't know if I was lied to or if someone was just auditioning for another one of the characters on the show.
Right.
But that was after every audition, getting in my car and then sobbing it in, being like, but there was another girl. Why are they doing this? Just tell me they don't want me.
Was it weird after the amount of success you've had to like go back to almost that level of going backwards in the audition process.
Right. I know. Well, it was, but also sort of, I loved the project so much that it didn't bother me. But also, yeah, at the same time, it was a high level of insecurity too. And you and that questioning that I'm talking about, where you are like, God, I've worked a long time already. And have people not noticed that I could do this stuff? And you know, that self-doubt kind of creeps in.
Well, I would imagine that at a certain point in that process, you know you're right for it.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Why were you right for Ruth?
It's actually like on a gut level, there are certain stuff, even if I feel like the character is nothing like me, sometimes I read something and I'm just like, oh, I know this person. Oh, I know them. And I know exactly how I would do it. And like, I just connected with it so deeply. And I have to figure that a lot of that does have to do with this thing of feeling underestimated. I think a lot of what's in Ruth is just, she's like, God, I have a wealth of, in her mind, a wealth of talent to give to the world. And I'm like not being allowed. There's this frustration of like, there are these gatekeepers between me and the thing I really want to do. And how come, even as a very ambitious person, I'm not able to just close that gap myself. It's
right.
A frustrating thing any actor can relate to. And again, even in this, the audition process just solidified it for me, where I was like, can't you see that I could do it? Where I feel like Ruth leaves that first audition going, why wouldn't you just give me the man's part?
Yeah, right.
It's like fantasy fulfillment. Like, I get to play a woman who is just going after what she wants.
Right.
And then also discovering that the thing that she wants, like that she can have that fulfillment in a way that she never expected. And even in a broader sense, even working in television, which is where I've had all of my success when I was much younger, would never have occurred to me. I had no interest in working in television. In theater school, in college, I was like, oh, your friend's on a TV show? I mean, I don't know how I feel about television, even though I watched a ton of it always. I used to be very snobby about it.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I was like, oh, but that's not what I'll do as a serious actress. Whereas now, you can do these great roles
for
on television.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, this whole show is a band of misfits.
Definitely.
I wonder if you identify at all with that misfit side of her.
Oh, yeah. It's
you
a
do.
Gang of underdogs. Totally. I think I've felt that way. I mean, working on a show like Community, which was such a big part of my life, and I think all of us together always just felt like the forgotten show on NBC. Like, we were part of the lineup that was like Parks and Rec, The Office, 30 Rock. And then there's that other show. Nobody look at that show.
Did it feel that way?
Oh, yeah. Maybe this has something to do with how I see myself, even, and looking at other actresses who seem like they really have it together. And, like, I never have, I don't know, have felt totally that way. But I've always been really focused on work. And, you know, it's like there are, you know, actresses who've been very successful, and they'll often be like, well, I didn't care at all if I even got that job, and so it just fell into my lap, and that's how it happened. And I'm like, I've never felt that way. I've always cared way too much, and I guess everyone can tell. It's like my constant battle to be like, I don't care if I get this job. Is this working? Do you think that's true?
You know, what's funny about that is that sort of describes your audition process on this show, because you know, there are actors who will say the last thing you want to do is give off the stink of desperation. And yet it seems like that was maybe part of your appeal on this.
I guess so. And it's like at the same time, I didn't even totally know I was doing it. I just really wanted it that bad. So I was just coming in to do whatever they wanted. And probably the truth is that I don't really care for very aloof people.
Right.
It's just not my thing. It's never going to be the vibe I put out, unless I actually don't care. And then that's when you are really in a position of great power.
But then you don't care anyway.
But then you don't care, so it's like, it's not a thing that's even worth getting.
Right. I think that's a strange phenomenon.
It is. Oh, it drives me crazy.
I mean, I would never want to be the type of person who didn't feel their own, like, stakes.
Yeah.
Because then why are you even there?
Yeah.
Go find something where you care.
Yeah, maybe find it. Maybe this isn't, oh, you've had great success at it. I guess then it's good for you. But, you know, yeah, it feels nice to care a lot about something.
I feel like Armie Hammer probably walks in. He's like, I don't care.
He doesn't care.
No.
He doesn't need any of these jobs. And they're like, he's the guy.
He is the guy.
God, that air of...
He has that I don't care thing that we
je
love.
Je ne sais quoi. We couldn't put a finger on it, but he just didn't seem to care. I know. That's never me. And that's a similarity I have with Ruth, definitely, that just I wear my heart on my sleeve in that way, and the stuff I really care about, I make known.
When you took this on, were there sort of some questions that you had about an actress that has to play an actress, and how would that look? And I mean, do you get to draw more on your own experiences?
Yeah, I guess I do. I think the tricky thing is like trying to reconcile how good of an actress is Ruth? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she can't be too terrible that it's like, you know, you never want it to be really broad. And something great about all of these characters is that they're very much grounded in reality, so that when we're doing the wrestling, it can be so over the top and crazy.
Right.
So like Ruth to me is not, I feel like so many reviews of the first season were about how Ruth is like a really terrible actress.
Which I don't think is true.
Thank you.
Yeah, not
at
all.
I don't think it's true, but maybe.
The opening scene, the audition, you're really good. Like,
I think in her acting class,
her,
I think Ruth's problem is like she just, it's like she has too much to give, you know? It's
right.
Like she just never found the stage big enough, or she just never learned quite how to translate her theater ability into acting on a smaller screen. So when she finds wrestling, it makes a ton of sense because she can just let it all out. I mean, the other side of it is like the politics that go into getting a job. And
right.
It's been interesting shooting this show in the midst of Me Too stuff and all of that, you know, and the women's movements and things like that, because we certainly are looking at a woman in a man's world, you know, trying to make her, all of the women on the show, trying to define themselves. And, you know, while men want to place like very firm stereotypes on them or think about them a certain way because of specifically how they look and things like that.
Well, there's a scene in one of the more recent episodes of almost like a Harvey Weinstein.
Oh yeah,
you know, come
yes,
meet
and
in
you
the bungalow.
That episode was written, you know, a year ago before any of this, before the Me Too and Time's Up movements really gained traction or were even a thing.
Which doesn't surprise me in terms of, we all know these things went on.
That's what I was going to say.
But it's so topical and timely. And, and I have the highest praise for your acting in that
scene.
Because what we read on your face as an audience is exactly what we were talking about earlier, is when you're a kid and you dream of being an actress, you hope that's not your value and your worth to somebody else.
Yeah.
And you go to this meeting with such high hopes and you're hit with this reality. And it's so... I don't know. It's so completely transfers to the audience. And
great.
Yeah, and
I
wondered about that if like how did you see that opportunity to play that scene in light of what's going
everything.
On? Yeah.
Well, many different things. were going on. I think one thing that's great about that scene is sort of the gradual nature in which it becomes sketchy and uncomfortable.
Yes. There's a couple of misdirects.
Yeah, and I feel like something that's talked about a lot is like, well, how could she not know? She was going to his hotel room for a meeting. Hello. You know, there's a lot of victim blaming that goes on in terms of people thinking, like, it's so naive that you're like, our industry is a strange industry. We have meetings in all different types of rooms, in all different capacities.
Totally. You're rolling on the ground in Toronto.
Yeah.
With a couple
and
of guys
real.
With iPhones.
Exactly. With a random stranger filming us. Like,
right.
So there's sort of no telling. There's not, like, there's no standard for that kind of thing. And how like, it's a very slow unfold that she comes into the room and sees that Glenn is there, a friend, someone she knows and trusts is there.
Oh, and that
says,
reads
oh,
on her face like, oh,
this is a safe situation.
My fears are unfounded.
For a minute, I thought this was going to be weird, but it's definitely not.
Yeah.
And then he leaves, and it's slowly, you just think, it made me really feel for people and also, I guess, reflect on some situations I've been in where you just go, yeah, God, there wasn't this very clear-cut opportunity to say, like, this is wrong now, and I've got to go, you know? Because
right.
you're not, it takes longer to figure out if what's happening is even wrong. And as actresses, we've been so programmed to not question certain types of behavior.
To please,
and to flirt, and to be wanting to be seen as an attractive object for people to be able to employ you. That's something, you know, even when we were shooting that scene, and this was one of the scariest things, that when I first read it, I was like, is this enough? Is he really even doing anything bad?
Are you serious?
Yeah. I was sort of like, maybe we should take it further. Like,
because for the record, he's nuzzling his face into your breasts.
He is. And he sort of, it's like, you can't tell, but it's like, maybe he puts my hand on... you know, his
okay.
genitals.
I didn't see that, but I'll go back and rewatch.
He definitely has Ruth in a position that's, like, very uncomfortable. Certainly, as we shot it, it resonated with me much more than just reading it.
Right.
It sort of did make me realize, wow, I've been in a lot of situations where I was really uncomfortable, and actually they were really inappropriate, and I just thought they were normal, even now as this conversation's going on, and I'm going, I'm so glad none of that really bad stuff ever happened to me. Wait a minute. You know, it did make me reflect on certain things. And so actually shooting that scene was so, I mean, it was easy to tap into the emotions and the fear behind those kinds of moments and just the helplessness of not knowing what to do. And then the flip side is, it was so nice to be able to shoot a scene like that on our set for Glow, surrounded by so many women. That episode was directed by a woman, and having our showrunners, showrunners, Liz and Carly, are on set when we shoot really sensitive scenes. And it was like a role reversal of, actually, I would say the most uncomfortable person was the actor having to do that stuff. And we
right.
had to, between every take, you know, myself and the director had to say, more, you could do more,
right.
you know, because he was like, I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. We were like, no, you have to make me feel uncomfortable.
Well, you bring up a great point about the comfort level on a set when it's a set that is sort of ran by women
yeah.
in terms of you could see that scene being written in a different show
yeah.
where it's having its cake and eating it too, where yes, on the page it is showing that behavior is bad, but
yeah.
in the room on the day, it could
be
uncomfortable
not as protected.
Still,
yeah.
right? And not as protected. And,
absolutely.
And you know, and there's several scenes. In the pilot, there's a sex scene, there's nudity, and I just wonder if that was just such a different feeling on this set than it has been in the past
yeah.
when you've had to do stuff like that.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. I mean, I had never done a fully nude scene before, so this was the first time that I was willing to sign off on that, and I actually was surprised at how cool I was about that, just in terms of, you know, so even before, I guess it would have been before I went to Toronto to audition with Betty, before my last two auditions, as it was getting more real that I might, the possibility of getting this job was
right.
more real, there was a phone call that was like, do not pass this point unless you're willing to sign this nudity rider. And I was like, yeah, sign it. I feel I just feel so strongly about this material and the people that are involved. And I've seen the way that nudity is shown on Orange is the New Black.
Yep.
Under Genji's supervision. I just didn't think twice about it because I think even for myself, I've never done nudity before this. And that was like definitely a choice. Constantly reading things, you know, and choosing not to audition, not offers, but choosing not to audition for stuff even, you know, because of the nudity, or sometimes being like, well, maybe I'll audition for it. And then at the last minute, we'll be like, but we're not going to do the nudity. Is that okay? And I guess in my mind, I was like, look, I'm not so against doing nudity, but I want to do it for the right thing, especially now, because you put it out there. It's out there forever. It's on the internet.
Sure.
People can pull it up. You want to have some connection to
the material. Yeah.
and what you're doing. I just feel like I had never read something where I felt like this nudity is definitely necessary and I really want to do it. And when I read this, and especially in the context of, you know, this show being about women's bodies and women really inhabiting their bodies in a kind of fresh way and like with a strength and like owning their own bodies.
Yeah.
So I ended up, before I signed any nudity writers or contracts, I did get on the phone with Liz and Carly to discuss this and say, like, why do you guys think, like, I have opinions about why I think I'd be fine doing nudity on this show, but why is it so important to you to have nudity on this show? And they basically said the same sort of thing. This is a show about bodies. We want to show all different types of bodies, and we want these women to really like live in their skin, and we don't want to show it in a gratuitous way, and we're never going to do that. We'll have many conversations with you about what we're shooting and how we're shooting it, and that just put my mind at ease.
And you probably never heard that before phrased that way.
Never. And really, you know, and then when we were on set, it really made such a difference you're so vulnerable, to have people saying very specific things about the way they're shooting it. Here's the frame. We have you from here. You know what I mean? We'd have our camera guy, you know, they strip down the crew so they're also
naked.
It's great. No, they do, you know, the smallest amount of crew that you can have in the room, just only like the people that need to be there, right, for that type of stuff. And you'd have the camera guy being like, okay, I'm in a close-up and I just have your face, just so you know, but when you lean forward, I see your boobs a little. Like, I want you to know, here's what's happening. And I'd be like, show me. And they'd flip it around, and I'd be like, looking. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, it's okay. And it was kind of cool. Like, the cool side of it was, even the way the scenes were shot, and that sex scene actually was even more comedic than I kind of had envisioned it, to be honest. But not shot in a gratuitous way. And also, just your body existing. Like, there's also I have a full nude scene in the pilot where we're just changing out of our clothes. And to me, that's the more interesting way to show nudity, which is like, I'm a
human
woman,
being.
This is my body, and here's how my body exists. And it's not about arranging a shot that's going to look really sexual or sexy. You know, even the sex scene was so comedic, boobs are bouncing around. You know, you might see unflattering angles and like, sure, you should. That's what life is. That's what our bodies look like when they're existing.
It must have been freeing to have those conversations, be able to do it in that way.
Yeah, no. It was really nice. If I looked at the frame and said, that makes me really uncomfortable, no one was going to say, well, you signed up for it, so you're doing it. It was a real, it's just a real safe, comfortable environment where these women, I think it makes such a difference having women at the top who can... They're where the buck stops. It stops with them. They're our bosses. They're determining what the content should be and what they want it to be. And the biggest difference to me is how willing they are to have conversations about things, even not about the nudity. Things with our characters, things with, you know, in season one, we deal a lot with stereotypes and women having to play real gratuitous stereotypes in the ring. And Liz and Carly have always been so open about having conversations to say, here's where we're going with this story. It made me realize how often actresses are just not given information because they just want to keep you in a state of like, just do your job. Just get on set and do your job. Here's the pages you need. And this is what you need to do. And, you know, and this is just sort of like given away very freely.
I'm realizing that your experience on this show probably opened your eyes retroactively to every other experience you've had on set of stuff you didn't even know you were missing.
Totally, totally. Because truthfully, I've worked on some great sets, and I loved working on Mad Men and Community. Great shows and great roles for women on those shows.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's sort of just very different to shoot a show that's not made through the male gaze. So there's no commentary coming from that perspective ever. And I think what we're realizing more and more is that men themselves don't realize sometimes when they're doing things, not that are like blatantly inappropriate, but just certain behaviors or the ways women are made to feel or the way they're spoken to or spoken about on a set. It's like, you want to not even fault certain guys who you're like, oh, he's a nice guy. And he didn't realize that maybe it does make me uncomfortable when we're talking about my body in this way, in this costume. But I've had a lot of conversations like that on sets that even I was like, I'm fine with this. And now later, the absence of it is glaring, of being like, this feels so different. This just feels so different. And the way that all of the women are on set, it's just like our set.
Right.
We own the set. And we feel so comfortable. And we're wearing next to nothing. But we're so far from being objectified. It feels like you're in our house.
I think it's easy for a man to make an excuse and go, oh, I don't understand women, or
I know
we're going to work around this and not have to really think about it. And hey, if we can get away with it and it makes it easier,
sure,
we'll just do that and everyone will get in line and go along. And I think you find out when you start looking at it a little more deeply is that we're missing a whole level of complexity and a whole level of enjoyment from knowing this other perspective that
yeah.
the show just shines a light on. And
yeah.
I mean, it's ironic that it comes in the form of an 80s wrestling show,
yeah.
because you watch the original Glow and it's the most sexist thing.
Totally.
And it's there to titillate men and everything. But
totally. But at the same time, the women on the original Glow made this bold decision to try this other thing and then kind of made it up as they went along. And they were also empowering themselves to do this very physical, weird thing that none of them had ever done before. And then the way it was received, yes, when you
yes.
watch the episodes, it's a full 100% male audience. They're like, yeah, they're like a little drunk.
Cafe.
They shot a lot of it. Yeah, like in Vegas, and people are like,
yeah,
smoke, yeah, get her shirt off. It's like, you know, you are kind of like, oh my God.
But you know, what's amazing is that in the mid 80s, there was probably a really powerful, empowering feeling going on.
Well, that's the thing, is
for
that
those women.
Friends of mine who watched the show as little girls were like, I loved that show. And for me, it was great because there was all this men's wrestling. And then I would see women get in the ring and do it. And they were all different shapes and sizes. And I saw all different types of people. And some of them seemed like me. And it made me feel strong. It's all about perspective. That's what we're talking about. Even with men who have done nothing wrong, we're just so used to seeing all programming from the male
yeah.
perspective. So it's
like a default. It's like not even thought about. It's just,
right.
this is the way it
it's
works.
It's just that whole shift that feels really different and good. Cindy Holland said the greatest thing this week when we were doing a panel talking about women and female content. And she was like, it just doesn't occur to me not to program for women or about women. So that alone
change.
Is a major difference
yeah.
from people thinking of it as like alternative content or something. And what's great about
yeah.
Glow to me is it's about women, but it's for men to watch as much as it's for women to watch, versus people thinking of female-driven content as being only for women and like...
Right, like
they
it's
need
a reactionary
their own, they need
thing.
Like the Lifetime Network to watch like women's programming.
Yeah, or if there's a bachelor party movie, then there's a bachelorette party movie. It's
right.
two separate audiences.
Right.
Well, I just had one thing I didn't want to forget about when you started talking about that scene in terms of, you know, going to the executive's hotel room.
Yeah.
Something occurred to me as you were telling me that story of thinking back and, oh, I've been in uncomfortable positions. Is there any actress your age or older that hasn't had those experiences?
I don't think so.
I think that is notable in terms of this isn't just what happens to some people who are unlucky or some people who want to go after certain roles or be in certain kinds of films.
Yeah.
It is an inevitability
yeah.
and part of the industry.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's another major misconception about any of that stuff is people saying like, well, that hasn't happened to you. You're smarter than that. And you're like, smart? That has nothing to do with it. Also, it has happened to me. It's happened to everyone. You know, I can only imagine the type of rooms that women who are older than me have been in.
Right.
You know, and hopefully we're trying to pave a way so that women that are younger than me will not have to be in those situations.
And you were young and you had multiple experiences of that feeling, and that's, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if your parents had enough awareness of that world to have any fears about you wanting to be an actress, where you were, oh, it's all about getting to work and play characters and be my, you know, be
right.
different people. If there was any sort of trepidation from your parents' side.
You know, I don't think there was. I don't think there was. And maybe part of that goes along with that preconceived notion of them being like, well, she's smart, a smart girl. She's got a good head on her shoulders. She's not going to find herself.
She won't be in one of those
in any
rooms.
Of those situations. And also,
I hate to break it to you, mom and dad.
Well, my dad did, you know, he called me to be like, are you okay? Has anything happened? And I sort of was like, no. I mean, yes, but like, no. For the sake of this conversation, let's say no. Because I want you to feel good. He's going to watch this and be like, what? But certainly there are like more extreme
scenarios. I feel like
scenarios.
He's really confused right now.
Yeah, maybe I'm confusing everybody. Well, I just mean, you know, in terms of, in the context of some women who have come forward have been through really horrible things that I have not experienced, and I'm very lucky to not have experienced those things. So on the, there's certainly a level of experience that I have not had to deal with. And then there is like the other level of it's sort of being around us all the time and other uncomfortable situations that I have had to deal with.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the physicality of the job itself. And I was curious just right off the bat if this show has changed your self-image, your body image, or your relationship to some sort of image you have to uphold. I mean, you're on the show without any makeup, and, you know, very recently you've been on the other side of that, of being the object of, you know, polls or most sexy or most this.
Sure.
And I was just curious if there's a freeing aspect to the physicality that also has changed your connection to that idea of having to maintain a certain image.
Absolutely. I think, first of all, through the wrestling and through doing more intense strength training with my personal trainer, there was a whole change that I have been going through for the last couple years working on the show. And that was, you know, that first thing of thinking, oh, an actress has to be really skinny. And really, when I'm exercising, I'm just exercising to burn calories so I can look skinny in outfits and not have to worry about my body, you know, in that way. And it sucks. It sucks. Because also, it's such a negative thought. It's about losing something. Weight.
Right.
When you're thinking about things as in a weight context, it's like very scary and feels like you're sort of at odds with your own body. Being like, I've decided you should be a certain way. I'm not going to listen to how you're feeling. You know, I just want to make you this way that I see the way that other people look.
Yeah.
And this process was much more personal and it was much more positive because it was, you know, I don't own a scale and I didn't weigh myself at all throughout any of this process. And it was not about losing weight. First and foremost, it was about building strength to be able to do the moves and to be able to literally support these other women in the ring and support myself so that I didn't get hurt. Because your body's much more resilient when you have muscle. It's just the best I've ever felt about my body. And really, in a healthy way, feeling like the way the women feel on the show, which is like, my body is mine for me. What should I do to make it its most powerful to serve me, not to serve someone else?
Some ideal.
Yeah.
Some unattainable ideal.
Yeah. It's felt really good. It's felt really empowering. And it definitely gave me a lot more confidence. But still, it's still something that I have to remind myself of sometimes, because the industry is changing, but it's not totally different all the time. And, you know, in my mind, strong is really sexy. But still, I don't know, you still can also look at a lot of movie stars and be like, oh no, wait. Sometimes there is a bit of backsliding of going, was it better the other way? You know, social media can be a very interesting and dangerous thing. And, you know, I try not to read comments when I post pictures or things, but sometimes I just can't help myself.
Those comments can lead to nothing but trouble.
I hate to even dignify it by bringing it up here on your show.
I wish that comments would be disabled in every social media device. Wouldn't it be great if a kid could post a thing and no one could say anything about it?
I think about that all the time. I'm like, God, thank God I didn't have this as a teenager, because it just
seems
horrible.
Who are the sick bastards running Instagram and Twitter? Like, why not just shut that off and increase the self-esteem of everybody?
I know. It's terrible. But the flip side is also that a lot of people being very supportive. It's actually been really fun with Glow. You know, Halloween was really exciting. A bunch of people posted videos dressed as our characters on the show. It was overwhelming. Yes, they were still all dressed in small leotards. And, you know,
But it wasn't the sexy fire woman or
And the pictures they were posting were them, like, jumping on their beds in a crazy wrestling move, like, or with another girl, like, striking strong wrestling poses. And it did just feel like they were having fun with it in a way that was empowering to them and that made them feel strong rather than, you know, like the sexy poses happening in those costumes, which also I'm like, women are allowed to want to feel sexy also. So if they're doing both, great. If they feel strong and sexy, that's like what I want for all women.
Yeah. As you talk about this, I just think, you know, where does it go wrong for a kid, and at what age do they start being aware of that and they lose that joy? Just like you're saying, of like, let's take a photo and jump up on the bed and wrestle and you know what I mean? Like, I get very sad for that transformation that takes place. And I hope that shows like this and conversations like this can just touch on the idea that there's different ways to do it and there's not a requirement to be that. And and I'm fascinated by, you know, by the whole phenomenon of it. And I wondered about, I mean, when I think about the wrestling specifically, I know that you do a ton of your own stunts on it.
Almost all.
And it made me wonder if there was an experience that stuck out to you in terms of, oh, my acting is different because I'm doing my own stunts. Or
Even just being able to, as an actor, inhabit your whole body, because your whole body is being used in the ring to convey whatever is going on with your character.
Right.
And it's why it was so important that all the women learn how to wrestle and be able to do their own stunts, is that we get to layer in a lot of complex stuff within the context of the ring. Especially when we see Ruth and Debbie in the ring together, there are so many layers to what's happening between them. You know, are they speaking? Are they not? How safe do they feel with each other in this moment? Like, where's their vulnerability meter? You know, something that we learned while in the process of doing the wrestling training is how much wrestling is about openness and communication. It makes for such an intimate performance with the other actor that we're in the ring with, because ourselves as actors have to be so keyed into them to be communicating, even within our choreography. So as actors, it's a crazy job. It's such a fun job. It's like you feel, I've never felt more present, maybe. It's like you really have to be in the moment because you're protecting a human being.
You talked earlier about feeling, in general, a relationship to the idea of being underestimated.
Sure.
And I wondered if, with the physical side, if you felt like you had something to prove there, even once you got the job.
So I had been doing strength training for 6 years by the time I got this job. And it was sort of like a secret part of my life that I just did for myself, and people didn't really know about it. So then having the opportunity to do this, and then to put it in the context of wrestling, which sounded very scary and exciting, it was just exciting. I love the idea of like facing a fear I hadn't really thought that I had, because I'd never thought about doing wrestling before.
What were you most scared of in terms of that side of it?
I don't know. I guess, you know, death.
I didn't want to die on this job.
I guess I didn't want to, like, break my neck or anything. But most
importantly, I guess that's a possibility with
those
moves.
You know what? Oh, yeah. But more than that, I think coming into this job, the wrestling training with all the women at the same time, the thing that I was most worried about, I guess, was not being a good leader. So I didn't ever want to show any hesitation. So it was actually really great.
Because you are, quote unquote, number one on the call sheet. You set the tone.
Which I've never been before.
Right.
And I was like, I can't show any fear. I don't want anyone to feel like this is scary. So I would be the first to try any move because I didn't want anyone to be afraid. And
that's
I guess I
so
didn't feel a lot of fear about it. I felt very excited and was like, great, let's do it. What's the move? And they'd show us, well, you're going to dive head first and hopefully tuck your chin just in time so you land flat on your back. And you'd be like, all right, here we go. And just no hesitation. It was a great way to live life. It was a great like experience that made me, you know, I can't always hold on to it, but it's something that I really have tried to keep as a part of my life in the way that I just live without fear and hesitation in a really adventurous way, I guess.
The main thing I take away from this conversation and from the show is that there are stories with such depth that are waiting to be told. It's interesting that in the world of marketing and PR and networks and studios and that there's this idea that there are segmented audiences,
sure,
that we make things for this audience or that audience, and
yeah,
hopefully that idea is going away.
I hope so. Hope we can be a part of dispelling that.
Yeah. Well, I have one more question that I wanted to ask that has nothing to do with GLOW, but you were in The Post with Meryl Streep. And
yes, I was.
And I would assume that getting an opportunity to work with someone like Meryl Streep is the closest you can get to getting an opportunity to work with the person who understands acting better than anybody, right?
Yeah.
And when you meet someone you feel is the source of so much mystery and information about what you love to do,
mm-hmm,
how can you not have this impulse to want to, you know, just put them in a corner and answer every question I've ever had.
You know, I would say my instinct is actually just exactly the opposite, because going into that, I was just like, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and just listen and just observe. And that's kind of what I did, almost to a fault. I feel like it was very important to me to be respectful of her and her space. And I obviously, she's one of my heroes. I admire her so much. And I just didn't want to be the person who was like, so tell me, during like Kramer versus Kramer, what about, you know, I asked her almost nothing at all. And
do you look back now and go, gosh, why didn't I?
Well, no, I feel like I still got so much out of it, you know, as I hoped, just working with her and observing her, which was my real thing, is I was like, I'm just going to watch everything she does and see what tricks I can steal and what is out of my reach, which is most of it. You're like, God, it just is innate and in her. I can't steal any of that.
That's got to be the most depressing thing.
Because you can't see immediately how she's doing. You know, you're not like, here are the inner workings of the way I'm playing this part.
Right.
But it is what you talked about in terms of her being incredibly present and inhabiting characters so effortlessly, and you really don't get the sense that she's planned out how she's going to do the scene or anything like that. And that scene was the first scene in the movie that I shot.
Oh, it was?
Yes. It was my first day on set, and it was fantastic because I think actually right away, the way the scene was going really put my mind at ease in terms of, like, you know, I had done a ton of research and really thoroughly plotted out how I would say all my dialogue just in case, you know, and then wanted to be open to whatever. And Spielberg came in and said, you know, just read the lines. We don't really need to rehearse, and I don't want to rehearse it too much, but just read
I like that Spielberg is the second tier of this story. Like, and then
Spielberg was also there. So he came in and I really loved working with him. I adored him. I actually asked him questions constantly. And he was very generous with his time with me, and I'm very grateful. But he came in and said, just read the lines. And of course, Meryl still kind of got up and started walking around the room and saying the dialogue and playing with my hair and just talking. And then I was just responding. And just very quickly, I was like, oh, this is going to be fine, because I just have to follow her lead. Like, she's the train and I'm just jumping on the train. And if I'm just listening and responding to her, that's what acting is. That's what we've always been taught. And, you know, when you're acting with a bad actor, I feel like sometimes you feel like you got to do some real heavy lifting in terms of what you're trying to relate, and you don't, it's the last thing you ever want to be doing. And her effortlessness made me feel more at ease and just more conversational with her. And I felt like, oh, I can just go on this ride and I know I'm going to be okay and it's fine. And look, it's as if we've had a relationship for years and I'm her daughter and we're just sitting here and everything's fine. I don't even have to look at her. And I think that was the biggest challenge for that whole job, was like, I had done all the character research and done all that stuff and did voice work and did all these different things and was like, I feel really good in the character. And now the big challenge of working on this movie will be keeping my cool on set and staying connected. I feel like often, like the first take that we would get, I would be really in my head of like, there's Meryl Streep, it's Meryl Streep, it's Meryl Streep. Spielberg's watching this on the monitor. You know, you'd have to get that one take out of your system to be like, this is just my mom, I'm just having coffee, everything's fine. To really be in the character, yeah. I think took me a second. But part of getting that kind of job is so exciting. And then you have to kind of say, well, I deserve to have this job and there's a reason I'm here. And that's because I'm gonna do my job the way I know how to do it. It's a job. Been doing it for a long time. I have to trust that I know how to do it and there's a reason I'm here, rather than coming and being like, I'm not worthy of acting in this scene with you, I think
right.
is the wrong approach that sort of can take you out of it. And you kind of have to be like, oh yeah, I should be here and I have my stuff, without having the flip side of a major ego about it, like, no notes, Spielberg, I've got this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that at all. But you have to have some confidence in your own ability to be able to get out of your head and just live in your character.
And how does Glow relate to that in terms of setting the bar of the kind of show it is? Like,
yeah.
Does it change your expectations?
Yeah.
Or does it even, is it even unrealistic?
It does, and it ruins you. Yeah. Yeah, I'm currently in this moment of just being like, these two jobs have ruined me, because I'm much more discerning reading new material. You know, the bar has been set so high
yeah.
that you don't want to go backwards. And I think that is the nature of ambition anyway, is that you and sort of what I was talking about right at the very beginning, is that like, you'll almost never be satisfied. Wow, Glow is a great job, but I'd only do it for 4 or 5 months of the year. So then the rest of the time you're like, I need another job that's just as good or better. It's like the bar has been set so high. I'm like expectationing myself out of work, essentially. When working much less, you know, because I used to just want to work and work on any job. And I think that that's part of having a career anyway and wanting career longevity, is like, at some point you do have to start making choices and hoping that you're making good choices rather than just doing every job.
Because when you're young, you have to take anything you can get.
Yes,
I think it should. And then it gets to the point where, well, how do I drive this train instead of be on it?
Yeah, to try to drive it a little bit. But it can be limiting. And I think that's where I realize what a bubble we're in with Glow, especially in terms of the complex roles for so many women and the female perspective and everything that we've been talking about. When we're shooting it, I feel like, God, we live in such a great time and everything's changed and isn't it great? And then we wrap the show and I go like released back into the wild to read film scripts and go like, huh, oh, well, we haven't changed that much. Or maybe, you know, or maybe the opportunities that are coming my way have not yet changed that much.
Well, I think the work you're doing is incredible. And,
thank you.
And the example you're setting and the projects you're working on, they're truly, you're making art. And,
thank you.
And I'm impressed and glad to get to know you a little bit.
Thank you.
So thanks for doing this.
Yes, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime.
Hey folks, that's our show for this time. Thank you for listening. If you couldn't tell from that conversation, I'm a big fan of Glow. And if you haven't seen it, go to Netflix right now and check it out. It's like no other show on television, and I just love it. So check that out. Also, you can see more of Alison Brie's work in The Post, and of course, in 7 seasons of Mad Men and multiple seasons on Community. How's that for range? Well, speaking of range, if you go to the off-camera website, you're going to see the range of artists that we have on this show.
We've been doing this for a long time now. In fact, I think Allison is our 151st guest. So if you want to see all of those episodes in all their glorious 4K black and white grandeur, the best way is to get an off-camera subscription. For only $4.99 a month, you can see every episode of Off Camera on any device as many times as you want to. In my humble opinion, it's the best way to experience the show. Of course, if you're in your car or running down the street or on a train, the podcast is great too, and I'm glad you're here. But if you haven't seen the TV experience yet, you owe it to yourself to see what Off Camera looks like. So go to offcamera.com, check out our subscription, and find out what it's all about. Also, when you're there, check out the Off Camera store. We make an exclusive magazine for every episode and every artist that we do. You can find print and digital versions of our exclusive off-camera magazine, which includes my photographs of each guest that have appeared on the show. Another way to see those photographs is in our coffee table book entitled Off Camera, The Portraits. That's a 275-page book that gathers together all of the iconic artists that have been on the show. It makes a great gift and a great addition to your coffee table. And we still have a few signed copies available, which if you send me an email, I'd be happy to inscribe to you or to your mom or to your dentist or whomever you'd like me to write a little note to. You can do that by sending me an email at sam@offcamera.com. That offer is valid until we run out of signed copies. So check that out. It's a great way to not only go more in depth with the visuals of Off Camera, but it's a great way to support the show as well. So it's a win-win. You can find us on social media at Off Camera Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I am Sam Jones on Twitter and Sam Jones Pictures on Instagram. If you like the show, take a minute, go to your devices, and tell the world about it, or tell your 125 followers. Don't keep us a secret. If you like what we're doing, spread the word. And I want to spread the word about our amazing staff who make this show possible every week. It comes out on multiple platforms. It requires a lot of work to put together and to book. And I could not do this show without all the talented and hardworking people that are here each week. We have Crawford Shippey, who produces and books the show. Nathan Shields, who does all of our editing and sound. Michaela McGalvin, who does all of our graphics work and camera work. Sasha Snow, who makes the entire studio run. Kara Johnson, our transcriptionist. And Matt Davidson, who, well, we're not sure what he does, but we couldn't do it without him. And be sure to join me next time when I sit down with actress Keri Russell.
I think once I was older, I look back and go, oh my God, I was living alone at 17. You know what's amazing? Like, I don't think I ever drank alcohol I think all of that happened much later. But I think they chose those kids. They want good kids, you know? They don't want pregnant Mouseketeers. They want, you know, the good kids.
You know, when you watch 6 seasons of a television show, you usually feel like you get to know a character a little bit. But with Elizabeth Jennings, Keri Russell's character on The Americans, I was never sure I did know her, and that fascinated me. As Elizabeth, Keri played dozens of other characters on the show, all part of her undercover spying operations. And with a little help in the form of wigs and glasses, Keri managed to transform herself on a weekly basis, creating perhaps the most layered acting I have ever seen. So how does a girl who starts out singing and dancing on the Mickey Mouse Club, then becomes a version of America's sweetheart in the 90s show Felicity, land on one of the darkest, most dramatic shows on television? Well, it might have something to do with the fact that she has a face that communicates trust and kindness. Essential qualities for an undercover, murderous Russian agent. See you next time, off camera.